It's time for Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the show focusing on fishing, hunting, outdoor recreation, destinations, and conservation in the region where you live and play. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lure Company, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Wallowa County. And now, let's see what's going on in the field and on the water with your host, John Cruz.
We're starting things off congratulating the winner of that 22 caliber Henry Golden Boy lever action rifle we gave away at the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show in Portland last weekend. The winner, Brandon Payne from Enterprise, Oregon, home of our affiliates KWVR AM 1340 and FM 92.1, which airs both of our programs every week. Congrats, Brandon. I hope you enjoy that beautiful Made in America rifle. This week on Northwestern Outdoors, we've got a lot coming your way. We recorded interviews with four great guests while we were at that sportsman show that we're going to be sharing with you today. Our first guest is Cindy Carpenter, that passionate advocate for hunting and youth who founded Youth Outdoors Unlimited 10 years ago. This organization provides free hunting and fishing trips for kids with serious physical disabilities and life-threatening illnesses, and has grown year over year in a great way. Mark Bush will join us for an extended Max Minute to talk Columbia River Gorge walleye and specifically what he's using to catch them. And then we will talk to very well-known Oregon guide Jody Smith. He fishes the Umpqua River, and there's all sorts of species you can catch there this spring and summer, to include striped bass, American shad, Chinook salmon, smallmouth bass, and more. After that, Matt Sawyer is joining us. He's the marketing manager for Lookout Pass. They operate the Route of the Hiawatha, perhaps the best rail trail bike ride adventure you'll ever experience. It's located just off of I-90 at the border of Idaho and Montana. I got to enjoy this 15-mile bike ride a few years ago, and I'll tell you what, it is something you simply have to do. In addition to this, we've got an Idaho turkey hunting forecast for you. News about a lower Columbia River catch and keep sturgeon fishing season coming up this spring. Our Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week. And something new, our very first Whoopsie Award for an organization who tried to do a good thing that didn't work out so well. Before we get to all this, though, let's check in and see what David Sparks has for us this week on Sportsman Spotlight. Brought to you every week by the Ag Information Network of the West.
Benefits of wild horses in the mountains. David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight. Rancher conservationist William Simpson articulates a brilliant argument for herding wild horses out of places where they are not wanted and up into the mountain wilderness areas.
On my ranch, where I have my 70 wild horses, our deer population is great because the lions are eating the horses and it gives depredation pressure off the deer. So our deer right in this one little niche area are able to recover, whereas everywhere else in California, they ain't doing.
Expletive deleted, ain't doing anything.
Bottom line up here, and people, a lot of the hunters I know don't know much about science. So they go, well, Bill, aren't there horses eating the food the deer need? Well, I says, no. You know, you need to go do your science. I'm not going to do your homework for you. If you want to know something, you got to go do the homework. But Hansen and Lawhorn brought in a team of scientists from U.S. Fish and Wildlife, California Fish and Wildlife, and U.S. Forest Service, and they studied deer and wild horses in the mountains of California on the Nevada border, and they found that deer and wild horses are commensal. That means that they can share the same deer, and they only have a 1% grazing overlap. That means that horses do not take food off deer's table. That's what that did, and that was a long study, too. That was a 7-year study by a multidisciplined team of scientists. It was totally agnostic. They wanted to know, are these horses depleting the supply of food for these deer? And the answer was no.
Rancher, conservationist, and scientist. David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has what you need as a hunter, angler, hiker, paddler, camper, and outdoors enthusiast. They also carry an extensive assortment of firearms and ammunition you simply can't find anymore at many big box stores. On top of that, their knowledgeable staff is here to help you purchase the right gear so you can get the most out of your outdoor experience. Visit your local Sportsman's Warehouse store today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com.
You've probably been told that to reach a millennial farmer, you have to go digital. Facebook, Vimeo, YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, LinkedIn, an online publication, or maybe a podcast. But which one? Oh, and how receptive is this age group to your sales pitch during non-work social time? Maybe the best place to reach a farmer with a farming solution message is when they are, well, quite frankly, farming. You know, it's easy for us to find them during the day as most farmers are behind the wheel of a pickup truck or farm equipment with the radio on, listening to this station for the Ag Information Network of the West News. If you'd like to deliver information about your terrific product or service, give us a call and we'll connect you directly with our community of loyal farmer listeners. Reach real farmers right here, right now, as they listen to what is important to their farm operation. They trust us, they'll trust you.
Go fishing, make money, help out, and have fun. That's what the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery is all about. From May 1st through September 30th, catch pike minnow out of the Columbia and Snake Rivers and turn them in for cash. Pike minnow eat juvenile salmon and steelhead. Each one you catch helps more juvenile fish reach the ocean. Pike minnow are worth anywhere from $5 to $8, and keep an eye out for tagged fish worth $500. Find out more at pikeminnow.org and go fishing.
Next up on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we continue to bring you audio we've recorded at the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show in Portland, Oregon. And I just happen to be set up right across the aisle from my friend Sydney Carpenter. She is the executive director for Youth Outdoors Unlimited, an organization doing some wonderful things for some people in need. Cindy, it's great to have you on the air again.
Good to see you, John.
So, Cindy, this all started off 10 years ago, and I still feel bad about this. We met at the Tri-City Show. You hail from Moses Lake. You were trying to get an interview for this brand-new organization, and I was like, I don't know. You're brand-new. I don't know if you're going to be around or not. 10 years later, you are not only around, you are going strong, and you have grown wings, and you are in all sorts of places in the Northwest. Let's start off with the basic mission and how it all started, and we'll get after that to how you've grown.
Awesome. Well, in end of 2010, we found a need for helping disabled youth in Washington State. And so we went to work. Of course, I asked my husband, because he was the hunting mentor for me, that I wanted to help a couple kids that were handicapped. And after that first year, and John, you were around when we took the two kids in chairs and one missing an arm, and we were just hooked from there on. And it's been exciting to see the growth from three kids the first year to 5 to 6 to 8 to 14 to a couple years ago we did 18 trips for kids.
Wow. And these kids, they're not just disabled kids. A lot of them are suffering from life-threatening illnesses. As a matter of fact, a lot of them have passed since these hunts, and that was like the last big thing some of them got to do.
That's correct. And that is heartbreaking for us. But it's also incredibly rewarding to give the families something to remember their kid by, and having an opportunity to get them outdoors. And I had a kid one time that said, I haven't felt this alive in 2.5 years. So we don't like it when the kids pass away.
Of course not. None of us like that. Right. But the fact that you were able to
do something good.
Absolutely. Right. And give them a really special gift is wonderful. So, again, you've been up to 18 hunts. COVID, I'm sure, threw a curveball into all of that. But let's talk about where you're at now. Again, you started in Moses Lake. You were having banquets there in Moses Lake. You still do, but you've got a much bigger footprint now.
Correct. And so this year being our 10th anniversary, which we're super excited about, and we were going to have a huge gathering of all of the kids that we've helped, which is over 125.
Wow.
But we feel like with the COVID thing that maybe we'll just wait and see what happens. But we do have a banquet in Moses Lake. We have one in Olympia. We have one in Yakima. We have one in Tri-Cities. And then this year we were excited to add Lewiston, Idaho to our banquet menu, if you want to call it that. And we've taken several kids from Lewiston, and just a couple of weeks ago we found two disabled youth that were going to be taken on hunts from there. So we're excited to break into fundraising in the Idaho area and get back to fundraising.
Yes,
and helping kids.
Absolutely. So let's talk about these banquets. Let's talk about some of the dates, and let's talk about what's going to occur at these banquets. Is it going to be similar to like some of the conservation organization banquets where there's raffle prizes and auctions and a nice dinner and other opportunities to help out?
It's very similar, and that's what we tried to copy. But the difference at our banquets is that's where you get to meet the kids that have gone on trips from the previous year. For instance, in Lewiston, Idaho, I have a little guy with cerebral palsy that'll be getting his Deer Mountain at the banquet, and we're excited about that.
Very cool.
Yeah, our Moses Lake banquet. And this was exciting for me as I have military children, that we have a girl who's a St. Jude's cancer survivor who went on an elk hunt, and she'll be getting her elk mount. But her dad's also career military. So it was fun to serve the military and the cancer kids at the same time. And, of course, our Olympia banquet this year, which is July 24th, is going to have several presentations at it, as well as Yakima and Tri-Cities.
All right. One more time on the dates for these banquets.
Okay, so Lewiston is April 10th. Moses Lake is April 24th. Olympia is July 24th. Yakima is September 25th. And Tri-Cities is October 2nd. And those dates are all on our website.
Which is?
YouthOutdoorsU.org.
YouthOutdoorsU.org. So let's talk about a couple more things while we still have a minute here. Number one, some of our listeners probably have some kids that would qualify in terms of having a life-threatening illness or being disabled. How do they get a hold of you to see if they can get their kids on a hunt? Or I also know you do some fishing trips, too.
Correct. So we do offer hunting and fishing. The kids get to pick which kind of trip that they want. We are very active on Facebook, so that's Youth Outdoors Unlimited, WA. And then, of course, on our website, and then my contact information is all on there. And we work on a referral program. So once I get that information, then I contact the families and make sure the kids are a good fit. So we are physical disabilities and kids with life-threatening illnesses and physical disabilities that require our adaptive equipment.
That's fantastic to know. Now, let's talk about if people want to help, because I understand all these trips are free. It doesn't cost the kid a thing to go on these trips, but that means you need some money, you need some help, whether it be donations of hunts and fishing trips by guides, or whether it be monetary donations. How can people help that way?
So again, on our website or by contacting me personally, we can help you with that process. My recommendation is try to attend one of our banquets. Our Lewiston, Idaho banquet, we are actually going to be streaming live, so people can do a sponsor a child or bid on an auction item, even if you can't attend. Without the money, we can't offer the trips for free. But I did want to say that without the kids, we don't need the money, right? So having some of our shows canceled this year has put a little bit of a hindrance on us finding children. So if somebody wants to know if their child qualifies, please get a hold of us and let's move forward, because we do have trips available for this year.
That's wonderful to hear. So if you have a kid that may qualify, or if you want to help out, your first stop is Youth Outdoors Unlimited, WA on Facebook, or youthoutdoorsu.org on the web. And make plans, if you can, to attend one of these banquets, even if it's online, to help them get some money so they can do this wonderful mission of offering these great trips for some kids who could really use a trip like this. Cindy, thanks for all you do. Looking forward to talking again on your 20-year anniversary on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thanks, Sam.
Next on Northwestern Outdoors, I've got to tell you, I really like Wyoming Game and Fish as an agency. However, they are going to be the recipient of something new that we're doing on the show.
It's time for a Whoopsie Award!
Yes, Wyoming Game and Fish is being given our very first Whoopsie Award for how they went about stocking a lake in the state capital of Cheyenne this winter. The lake in question is Sloan Lake, which had been stocked last summer with 1,500 catchable-sized channel catfish. Anglers really enjoyed this new opportunity, and in December, the agency partnered with the Wyoming Women's Center in Lusk to stock 500 more channel cats. Each of these fish weighing between 2 and 3 pounds. All seemed good and well until the lake thawed out this spring and a whole bunch of those catfish were found floating belly up. It turns out the transition from the warm waters of the hatchery to the ice-cold waters of Sloan Lake this winter was too much, and temperature shock did them in.
Whoopsie!
It's a lesson learned, I guess. Maybe a pretty obvious lesson one from a common sense point of view. And for that, Wyoming Game and Fish, here you go.
Congratulations! You won the Whoopsie Award!
our first Whoopsie Award just for you. Don't go away, we've got more of the outdoors coming your way, to include an extended Max Minute focusing on walleye and some Southwest Oregon waters you'll want to fish this spring for all sorts of different species.
Tired of the noise, the hustle, and bustle of the city? Then find your solitude in the lands of Wallowa County. Bring your camping gear and hike into the Eagle Cap Wilderness. Explore the Zumwalt Prairie. Rise with the sun on the Wallowas and hear the early morning stirring of the wildlife. Smell the fresh coffee, the sizzling bacon, and the crackle of the fire. This is a good life, and it's waiting for you in Northeast Oregon's Wallowa County. Come and enjoy one of Oregon's seven wonders, and you'll wonder why you haven't been here before. Your getaway starts at WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand public access to the outdoors. Our outdoor heritage depends on sportsmen and women like you speaking up for the natural resources that sustain our way of life. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org and become a BHA member today.
We're back with more of the great outdoors on Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
We've got audio from the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show in Portland. We're talking to Max Pro Guide Mark Bush. He is the owner of Twisted Waters Guide Service. Mark, great to have you back on the air.
It's good to be here.
So you are actually living near the Dalles in the Columbia River Gorge now, and that's the area you're fishing. I understand this April you're going to be spending the month fishing for walleye on the Columbia. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Let's talk about what the walleye are doing in April. I think everybody knows to go after them in February and March, hoping for that trophy pre-spawn walleye. Have the walleye spawned in April yet, or are we still in the pre-spawn?
In April, we're still in the pre-spawn. The males are kind of up in the shallower water between 17 to 25 feet. The females, the bigger fish, are going to be in the deeper water waiting to spawn.
How deep are we talking here, 25 to 35?
Shoot, last weekend, we were catching them in 60 feet.
That is surprising to me. So when it comes to catching them this time of year, are we still jigging for them or are we doing something else?
I really prefer to troll using worm harnesses, downhill troll, using a bottom walker and a worm harness, using the Max double whammy, just hooking a worm up and going downriver.
Well, those double whammies have worked great for a long time on walleye. What's your preferred color this time of year? Is it a chartreuse because of the off color?
They've got a blade, and I don't know what name it is, but it's kind of a blackish green, and it's got this iridescent little shine to it. And for some reason, the walleye are just loving that one.
Well, there you go. We don't know the name of it, but you'll know it when you see it.
You'll know it when you see it.
So look for the double whammy at a sporting goods store near you, or you can look for it online at maxlure.com. And if you want to go fishing in the Columbia River Gorge for walleye, either their eater-sized males or maybe some of the big trophy females, get a hold of Mark Bush at Twisted Waters Guide Service. He's on Facebook. Do you have a website too?
Yes, it's twistedwatersgs.com.
That's twistedwatersgs.com, or look for Twisted Waters Guide Service on Facebook. Book now for a great walleye trip in the Columbia River Gorge. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
P.S. The color of that lure, motor oil. Walleye anglers all over the Northwest are raving about the new SmileBlade Spindrift Walleye Lure made by Max Lure Company. Lance Mers is with us here to tell us more about it.
This lure is fantastic. We've got the patented SmileBlade. We've got a pill float that keeps it just off of the bottom where the fish like to bite. And that Spindrift hook is absolutely phenomenal. You can tip it with any kind of bait.
Tip it with a crawler, tip it with a leech, whatever you tip it with, it's going to catch more fish. It's the SmileBlade Spindrift Walleye Lure, only from Max Lure Company.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has what you need as a hunter, angler, hiker, paddler, camper, and outdoors enthusiast. They also carry an extensive assortment of firearms and ammunition you simply can't find anymore at many big box stores. On top of that, their knowledgeable staff is here to help you purchase the right gear so you can get the most out of your outdoor experience. Visit your local Sportsman's Warehouse store today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com.
I'm gonna take you fishing, honey. You're gonna love it. Gonna get up before the sun rise above us. Got a bamboo pole and a leaky boat.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We're catching up with Jody Smith today, one of the best known fishing guides in Oregon State. And we're going to talk about his home water, the Umpqua River, which in many ways is one of the best fishing rivers in Oregon State too. Jody, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.
So Jody, I know during the spring you are completely tied up with turkey hunts. You don't even have time to go fishing. But when you do get to go fishing, at least for fun, there's all sorts of things to go fishing for during the spring months. And I'd like to start off with one that's very unique when it comes to the Pacific Northwest, stripers, striped bass. It's not an opportunity we see very often. Tell our listeners about this fishery on the lower Umpqua River and how somebody might want to go after these fish.
It's a growing fishery. There's a lot of interest in striper fishing, and everybody kind of thought over the last 10, 15 years that the striper population is way down, but it's made a gigantic comeback the last 4 to 5 years. The Smith River down by Reedsport and the lower water and the tidewater, Smith River and both the Umpqua down lower are very good, as is the Coquille River. It's a very good fishery. You can have 20 fish days, normals 5 to 10 fish days. It's a good fishery. We target mostly with swim baits, casting. The guys that do the bait fishery on anchor have good success also, but it's not as much fun for me. I like to move and cast and go after them more. So it's a good fishery.
What is striper season? And when we're talking about the Coquille, when we're talking about the Umpqua, what's an average striper and what's a good striper?
Average is probably 8 to 10 pounds. A good one is a 40 to 50 pound range. I know 2 years ago there was a 50 pounder, or maybe last year, there was a 50 pounder caught right on the Smith River there out of Reedsport. And 36 has been the biggest one we've had in our boat so far.
Wow, that is very impressive. Is now the time to target them, early April?
You can start targeting in April through May is typically the best. It's a very weather-related fishery. But for your best success, you need like 52-degree water. You need overcast skies, the bright sunny days, although those are the most fun days to fish in. They're not the most productive down there.
And tell our listeners about the swim baits you like to use in terms of the size and the brand and the color.
Oh, I can't tell people the secrets. The shad-colored ones.
You don't have time to fish for them anyway.
I do a couple of days. The shad-colored ones, the white with a little bit of chartreuse on them. We like 1 ounce to 3 ounce, depending on the conditions and the debris in the water. But there's 8,000 different brands out there that you can use. Basin Tackle in Charleston, Oregon probably has the best selection of any place locally. And he actually striper fishes also, so that'd be a good place to stop.
Speaking of shad, most people think of the Columbia River and the massive shad runs that have been up to 5, 6 million fish in recent years, but the Umpqua's got a solid run of shad too. That one starts a little bit earlier than the one in the Columbia, doesn't it?
Yeah, you can get them in April there, but May is usually the first week of May, second week of May. Little tiny grubs, little tiny 16th-ounce jig heads on them work good. Some of the guys are running them behind divers now or behind mag lips and putting the shad darts behind them. Any color works as long as it's pink. So chartreuse will also work, but pink's by far and away the most productive.
You know, the funny thing is, I mean, yes, you can use the curly tail grubs, but at least on the Columbia, you can just fish the shad dart, literally just the jig head and a bare hook, and it works just fine. Same thing on the Umpqua?
Not as well, but some days you can catch them on anything. I know a lot of the guys in the Columbia use like a Dick Knight spoon or some of those little spoons and the triple teaser minnows, and we haven't had great success on the Umpqua doing that. It's been almost a little grub with a shad dart on it or something for a little bit of weight. And the fly fishermen, there's a lot of flies available out there too that work very well.
And I was going to ask about that. Years ago, I read a great story by Russell Chatham about fishing the Umpqua using a fly rod. What kind of flies do you use to catch shad?
Anything that's got some color on it. You need either a barbell head or something that's fairly heavy on the head to get down, a sinking line, of course, and a lot of our fishing, we anchor up and cast out and leave the rods in the holder, especially behind a diver. The fly fishermen guys need the drift to get down, so they're casting sideways and letting it drift through this current. Red, pink, chartreuse, even black and red have been a couple of really good colors, and we tie most ours ourselves.
The other fish we should talk about, if we're talking about the Umpqua River and those other rivers in the area in spring chinook.
The spring chinook fishery, I have four confirmed already caught. It's fairly early for them, especially with the water conditions we've had. But April, May, June are the target months typically for those fish. We have now, you can only keep a hatchery fish, and they'll probably 10% of the fish you would catch will be a hatchery fish. So
is the run depressed there like it is in the Columbia River this year?
It's too early to say for this year. Last year wasn't as good as the year before. The year before wasn't as good as the year before that. So I guess my answer would be yes.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate trend that I hope we're able to turn around soon. Now, another fish we should talk about when it comes to the Umpqua, and this is one of those fisheries that sometimes gets a lot of press, other times seems to be forgotten, smallmouth bass. And this is a fishery I know kicks off in the spring, goes all the way through the summer, and it's just an absolute hoot whether you're fishing off the bank or fishing out of a drift boat.
It is, and you can start. My first trip, I think, is June 11th for pre-spawn.
June for pre-spawn?
Yeah, we've caught them at river height 10 feet.
Wow.
It just matters on water temperature and the conditions. It's tough to target a date for the pre-spawn because it varies so much from year to year and water conditions on there. You never know, but it goes typically from June all the way through October pretty successfully.
Let's talk about numbers. I've had the opportunity to fish this once before, and boy, we got in a ton of fish. But, you know, a typical day, you got a couple clients in the boat. How many smallmouth bass can they expect to reel in? And what's the average size? And again, what's a big one?
Big one's 8 pounds. That's the biggest. My second biggest one's 6 pounds. So you could say the 8-pounder was a fluke. But the average size is going to be 14 to 16 inches with a couple 18 to 20 inches a day. The record for one person is 321 landed in one day, and we average 100 per person per day.
That's amazing. The only other time I've run into bass fishing like that is on the John Day River. The difference is those John Day bass generally are all like about 6 inches long with the occasional 3-4 pounder showing up. But to have quality bass like that and that many, that is amazing. Now, again, we started out acknowledging the fact that you don't get to go fishing in spring because you're pretty much taking clients out everyday turkey hunting. When are you available to take clients fishing when it comes to bass or anything else this summer?
I have a little bit of time the first week or two of April, a little bit of time the first couple weeks of June before I head to Astoria for sturgeon, and my July and the first part of August is wide open.
I guess there's one other fishery we should mention, too, that you've kind of dived into the last couple of years, especially during the off season. It's not on the Umpqua. It's on the coast, though. Surf perch. This has really caught on.
It's amazing. It's the fastest growing fishery in the state of Oregon right now as far as numbers of people that are enjoying the sport. I think because you get to take something home to eat and you do not have to have a boat. You can just go down on the beach and cast off, and they're incredible eating. I'm doing 30 to 40 surf perch trips a year now.
And folks, I would tell you this. I tried surf perch fishing for the first time up at Ocean Shores early this winter. I caught a 6-foot length of rope. That's all I reeled in. So it's probably worth going with a guide or somebody who knows what they're doing the first time around. Consider it an investment, and the return on your investment is fishing by yourself and knowing how to do it for years to come. What's the website folks should go to if they want to book a fishing trip with you?
JodySmithGuideservice.com, or just on Instagram and Facebook, also just Jody Smith Guide Service.
That's Jody Smith. He, again, is one of the best-known fishing guides in Oregon State. Elkton, Oregon is where he calls home. He loves to fish the Umpqua. He loves to fish the coast. You'll find him all over the state, at least the western part of the state, catching fish, too. The website, again, JodySmithGuideservice.com. Jody, always a pleasure to have you on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed the visit.
I always love visiting with Jody Smith, and yes, that audio was recorded right outside the Expo Center, and yes, those were geese that you were hearing in the background that were flying over every couple of minutes. Stick around, we've got more of the outdoors coming your way, recorded at the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show in Portland, right after these messages from our sponsors.
Rides above us, got a bamboo pole and a leaky boat. It ain't much, but if you bail, it'll float. I'm gonna take you fishing, honey. You're gonna love it.
Go fishing. Help salmon and make money. You can do it through September 30th by catching northern pike minnow and turning them in for cash. Here's how it works. First, register at a designated station on the Columbia or Snake River. Then, go fishing. At the end of the day, turn in any pike minnow you catch 9 inches or longer and look for the ones with tags worth $500. You'll get vouchers for those pike minnow you turn in, and you mail those in for cash. Find out more at pikeminnow.org.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
Next up on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we continue to bring you audio recorded at the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show in Portland, Oregon. There's folks from all over the greater Northwest, and for that matter, North America here. And one of them I had to talk to is representing the Root of the Hiawatha. Now, the Root of the Hiawatha, if we haven't told you before, is perhaps the greatest bicycling experience ever. Out there. With us here to tell you more about it is Matt Sawyer. He's the Director of Marketing and Sales for Lookout Pass, which operates the Root of the Hiawatha, located right on the border of Montana and Idaho. Matt, it's great to have you on the air.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to it.
So, Matt, I had the opportunity to ride the Root of the Hiawatha with my son a few years back, and it was an epic experience. Why don't you go ahead and describe this experience for our listeners?
I guess the quick way to sit there and talk about it would be to say it's a family adventure. It takes about 5 hours. We encourage people to come. But what makes the Hiawatha different is it's 15 miles. It's all downhill. That people gets the amen right there. We give you a shuttle ride from the bottom back to the top for those that don't want to ride up. If you wanted more exercise, you can choose to ride back up from the bottom. The key things there is what you experience on the trail. There are 10 tunnels and there are 7 sky-high trestles. The two highest are 230 feet above the ground.
I guess we need to clarify for some folks here what kind of trail the Root of the Hiawatha is.
The Root of the Hiawatha is a rail trail. It's the old Milwaukee Road that was abandoned back in 1980, accepted by the Forest Services, and created into a leisure trail for people to enjoy a bike ride on.
The thing I really enjoyed about this, besides the outstanding views and just the whole experience of bicycling through like mile-long tunnels and over these high trestles, and yes, folks, it's all perfectly safe, don't worry about that, is all of the history. There's tons of interpretive signage and tons of history that took place here besides just the building of a railroad.
What's really neat is the history of the railroad itself. And as he said, you can check out all these signs on the website, ridethehiawatha.com, ahead of time. That way you can plan out your ride. There are 50 signs out there, but you might find there's 5 that really interest you and you want to stop and really take in the view or understand what took place in that location.
And what took place, folks, in some cases had to do with mining, in other cases had to do with logging, in a lot of cases had to do with the building and operation of this railway. There's interesting information about what happened during the 2 world wars involving our troops and transportation. And of course, there's the Big Burn, one of America's largest wildfires that came through here. What was it, 1910?
That is correct. 1910 was the Big Burn. It's the largest forest fire in American history. 3.5 million acres in America, 1.5 million acres in Canada, and it destroyed this valley.
And if you ever want to find out more about that, great book by Tim Egan, simply called The Big Burn. It's a must read, and you'll get so much more out of it on the Root of the Hiawatha. Let's get back to the fun part of this, as opposed to the historical part, because I'm getting to be really nerdy here really quick. Now, this is all downhill, and we're not talking a steep downhill. It's a really slight grade downhill, because steep downhills don't work for trains any more than they work for old folks trying to ride bikes. And that's the great thing about this. You can be literally any age. As long as you can ride a bike, you can enjoy this.
You are correct. And it's a 1.6% average grade. It drops about 1,000 feet over the full 15-mile length. So it is a reasonable ride for an athlete to go back up, but most people choose to take advantage of the shuttle bus because it makes it easier for them and more enjoyable.
The other thing we should talk about is the bicycles themselves. Now, you can bring your own bike, but you're going to have a headlamp. What else do you have to have?
You have to have a headlamp and you have to have a helmet for the ride. Occasionally some rocks will fall inside the tunnel, an animal might scramble up the outside. Sometimes we even see kids scrambling up the outside of the tunnel. So we want to make sure that none of that comes down to hurt you. There's water that drips inside the tunnel, so it's recommended that maybe in the first tunnel, the St. Paul Pass, which is 1.66 miles of darkness, that you do bring a coat. Some people enjoy even having gloves. And you'll get a little wet if you ride fast, but if you ride slow, you won't really carry too much with you.
The other thing we should talk about is this. Not everyone is going to bring a bike with them, but they might still want to try that, and that's okay, because at Lookout Pass, you actually have rentals, don't you?
We do. We actually have one of the largest rental fleets in the country. About 680 bikes available, including tag-alongs for kids to ride behind a parent, burly trailers to carry infants along for the ride. We have bicycles built for two that you have to call to make reservations. We have tricycles for adults in case somebody might be a little balance impaired, as well as recumbent bikes that are all available for rental and make it enjoyable for everybody in the family.
How long does it take the average person to go through the route of the Hiawatha, get down to the end, get the shuttle back, and be on their way again?
I like to say 4 to 5 hours, and a little longer if you have a lot of young kids where you want to take more breaks and just keep them happy.
And that's the other thing, folks. There's lots of pull-offs. There's lots of places to take breaks, whether it's at the interpretive signage places or otherwise. You're not in any sort of race. You can take all the time you want, and folks, the scenery is just magnificent along the way, too. As a matter of fact, the route of the Hiawatha, you've garnered several awards about this adventure.
Well, I think the one that we're most proud about is it was one of the first inducted into the Hall of Fame jointly with the Trail of the Coeur d'Alene. So we are the first two trails that formed up the Hall of Fame of Rails to Trails. There's now 24 trails on that marker, but we were the first.
Wow. All right. So, again, you're located right on the border of Idaho and Montana, right off of Interstate 90. And you'll go to Lookout Pass. You'll go ahead and fill out your paperwork, make your reservations for the rentals there. Then you go into Montana, basically one exit, as I recall, and you just drive a short distance. They'll give you your bike. You set yourself up, and off you go. And at the end, a shuttle will take you back to the tunnel, and you bicycle that 1.6 miles back for a grand total of how many miles?
Your total ride's 15 miles.
Sounds like a great day. A lot of folks are going to want to make a night of it. Where do you recommend they stay?
We always shoot for Wallace, Idaho, or St. Regis in Montana, based on which way you're traveling from.
I'll tell you what, folks. Wallace, Idaho, one of my favorite places. Had a Northwest Outdoor Writers Association conference there a few years back. If you get some time, check out this little town. It's really spunky. The Wallace Inn is a great place to stay. Several other places to stay in Wallace as well. There's good restaurants, good pubs. And if you get a chance, take the Silver Mine Tour. Are they still offering that?
The Silver Mine Tour is awesome. There's also a Gold Mine Tour at the other end of town, just a little outside. And the Northern Depot Railroad Museum, for those that are really into the railroad, is a great place to visit.
Bottom line is this, lots of fun to be had on the rails and trails around the border of Idaho and Montana and Wallace, Idaho. If you want to find out more, what's the website we should send them to?
www.ridethehiawatha.com.
That's RideTheHiawatha.com. RideTheHiawatha.com. Make plans this summer to go bicycling. You're going to love this adventure. Thanks so much for sharing this with us, Matt.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you for having us on.
Go fishing, make money, help out, and have fun. That's what the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery is all about. From May 1st through September 30th, catch pike minnow out of the Columbia and Snake Rivers and turn them in for cash. Pike minnow eat juvenile salmon and steelhead. Each one you catch helps more juvenile fish reach the ocean. Pike minnow are worth anywhere from $5 to $8, and keep an eye out for tagged fish worth $500. Find out more at pikeminnow.org and go fishing.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has what you need as a hunter, angler, hiker, paddler, camper, and outdoors enthusiast. They also carry an extensive assortment of firearms and ammunition you simply can't find anymore at many big box stores. On top of that, their knowledgeable staff is here to help you purchase the right gear so you can get the most out of your outdoor experience. Visit your local Sportsman's Warehouse store today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Hurry, though. If you wait too long, the big opportunity might just get away. AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
Nature at its finest. That's what you'll find in Northeast Oregon's Wallowa County. Paddle a kayak or go fishing at Wallowa Lake. Hike into the Eagle Cap Wilderness or soak in the views after taking the tram to the top of Mount Howard. Then take time to explore the towns of Joseph and Enterprise. No matter how you take in this country, you're sure to enjoy it. That's the beauty of Wallowa County, and that's why we're home to one of Oregon's seven wonders. Find out more at WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Game-changing. That's the best way to describe the new Scent Flash UV Triangle Flasher from Max Lure Company. This 360-degree rotational inline flasher features a scent release system attracting salmon to the lure behind it like no other flasher on the market. Soak the free scent pad with any type of oil or gel, or load up the cavity with any type of bait for fishing success beyond your wildest dreams. It's the Scent Flash UV Triangle Flasher, only from Max Lure Company.
Pheasants Forever is working hard every day to ensure there's more wildlife habitat for the future. To join us, go to pheasantsforever.org.
We've got time for one more shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
I'm glad you're back, because we've got some outdoors news to share with you. We're going to start off in Idaho, where the youth turkey season opens up April 8th and the general turkey season opens April 15th. According to Jeff Netter, the state upland game bird manager, the turkey outlook for the 2021 spring season is looking pretty positive. Turkey populations in general were pretty healthy heading into the winter, and this winter was relatively mild throughout the state. In addition to this, they've had no major events that give them cause for concern regarding turkey survival. Last year was good for turkey hunters, and there's no reason to believe it would be any different in 2021. Netter noted the harvest was up in 2020, and so were the numbers of turkey hunters in general, likely due to the COVID pandemic, which led droves of new men and women into the field to either start hunting or get back to it. Turkey hunters will find most of their opportunities in the Panhandle, Clearwater, Southwest, and Southeast regions of the Gem State, while most other areas are limited to controlled hunts. In each of the regions with general hunting opportunity, though, turkey populations are faring well, and the hunting outlook is as good or better than recent years. Heading from Idaho to the Columbia River estuary, we've got some good news, because Oregon and Washington anglers will get to catch and keep sturgeon starting May 10th between the Wana power lines by Kathlamet downstream to Buoy 10 at the mouth of the river. The catch and keep season will run through June 5th, and it's open Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays from daylight until 2 p.m. You are allowed to keep one white sturgeon per day, measuring 44 to 50 inches from nose to the tail fork, and the season limit is only two fish. Do remember that you can only use a single point barbless hook, and if you catch a green sturgeon, you have to let it go immediately unharmed. By the way, have you ever tasted smoked sturgeon before? Trust me, it's delicious. All right, now it's time for your Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week, and it's about the lifespan of fish, and yes, sturgeon are involved. Here's your question. Which of these fish found in the waters of the Northwest lives the longest? Would it be the walleye? Would it be the lingcod? Or would it be the white sturgeon? If you think you know, just go to our Facebook page at Northwestern Outdoors Radio. Like and follow our page if you haven't already, then look for the post thread where we have the question and give us your answer there. If you don't do Facebook, or for some reason you can't find that post thread, just enter through our website. Go to northwesternoutdoors.com, scroll down to where you can contact us, and let us know which of these fish lives the longest on average. Would it be the walleye, the lingcod, or the sturgeon? One lucky person who guesses right wins that $25 gift card we give away every week from America's Premier Outfitter, and they've got a spring sale going on right now where you can get fishing gear and camping gear and outdoor apparel at some great prices. Check it out at your local Sportsman's Warehouse store and online at sportsmans.com. It's time to wrap things up, and I hope you enjoyed a lot of our music we used in the show today from that talented bluegrass artist, Frank Prenevost. He does our theme music, too. We've got a link to some of his wonderful music on our website at northwesternoutdoors.com if you want to check it out and maybe buy a few tracks to support him, too. Until next time, do take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.